turn to the book of Job. We're going to be studying Job next. Someone had asked me why, if we're not under the Old Testament law anymore, why do we study the Old Testament? And I told them, among other things, that one of the reasons we study the Old Testament is that it was a foundation for the New Testament. As you read through the New Testament book, you'll find that there are a lot of things in there that you will not understand if you don't know those Old Testament stories that they're based on. I counted in the little book of Jude, just one chapter, 25 verses in the book of Jude, I counted 7 or 8 references just in those 25 verses to things that had happened during the time of the Old Testament that are recorded in the Old Testament. And so, you would, just 25 verses and 7 references in there to these things, if you don't know what he's talking about, you're going to have a little bit of difficulty understanding some of the major thrusts of the book, some of the major points of that book. And a lot of the books are that way. Jesus told the Pharisees, examine the scriptures. And at the time he said that, the New Testament hadn't been written yet. He was talking about the Old Testament scriptures. He said, examine them, for in them you think that you have life, and they are they which testify of me. And so that's another reason that we study the Old Testament, oddly enough, to learn about Christ. And it's amazing, though, how the Bible is just one book with many chapters. If you think about it, if you've ever seen a movie that had a sequel, if you went to see the sequel and didn't see the first movie, you'd miss a lot. You wouldn't know what was going on. I think about one of the big ones that's been out recently is the Lord of the Rings, based on a book by Tolkien. And a big money making. Lots of people went to see this movie. Well, they've made two. The third one's coming out here before long. Well, if you just go to see the third one and you haven't seen the first two, you're going to be totally lost. You won't know what's going on now. Sure, the action and the adventure, it'll still be exciting, but you won't know the story. And that's the way it is with a lot of people who just study the New Testament. Oh yeah, the excitement of Jesus' death and his resurrection, and some of the teaching that Paul has about the grace of the Lord and about faith and some of these things. But without the background of the Old Testament, those lessons are not nearly as clearly understood. The book of Job is a very special book. Quite probably, the book of Job was the first book written. You say, what do you mean? It's in the middle of there's a bunch of the books before Job. But Job lived before the time of Moses. He did not live under the law of Moses. He lived during what we refer to many times as the patriarchal age. And one of the ways we know he lived before the time of Moses is by how long he lived. We do not know how old Job was at the time that these events took place. What we do know is that he had 10 grown children. Now, to have 10 children and for all of them to be grown, you can't be real young. It doesn't work that way. It takes a long time to have children and to have them grow up. And if he had 10 grown children, he had to have been, I think I calculated one time, he had to have been at least 65 or 70 to have had these children and to have them all grown. But what we learn about him toward the end of the book, in chapter 42, is that after these events happened, he lived another 140 years. That means he lived to be at least 200 years old. By the time that Moses lived, Moses was a very old man when he died at 120. When Jacob went down to Egypt, anywhere from 200 to 400 years before the time of Moses, Jacob said, well, I haven't lived as long as my fathers lived. I've only lived for 147 years. So the fact that Job lived about 200 years, that puts him in the category with those folks that lived at the time Abraham did. So likely, this book, if it was written either by Job or by someone at that time that these events happened, then this would have been written well before Moses penned any of the other books like Genesis or Exodus, or certainly before the land of Israel existed. But regardless of when it was written, the man himself we know lived back during that time, during that patriarchal age, when people lived a lot longer than they do now. Lived a lot longer than even the people did during the time of Moses. And so we know that he lived before that time. If you read in the book of Genesis and read some of those ages, and you see after the flood, people's ages began very quickly to become shorter and shorter lifespans. Very, very few lived over 300 or 400 years, and then they began to drop off and drop off until you get down then to where some of them didn't live to be 100 even. And so Job, a very special man that lived at this time. The other way that we know he lived in the patriarchal age is the fact that he offered the sacrifices to God himself. He didn't have to go through a priest like they did under the Mosaic law. He offered his sacrifices to God himself, which is what we read of Abraham doing and the others at his time frame. In Job chapter 1 and verse number 1, we're introduced. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. That means he stayed away from evil. He shunned evil. He did not like evil. He liked what was good. He feared God, and he stayed away from evil. The Bible says that he was perfect and upright. Now we know that doesn't mean that he was perfectly sinless, because no one was perfectly sinless. But he was perfect, mature in his relationship with God, so much so that God is willing to use him as the test case between him and Satan. God knows that Job is going to be a man who's going to stick with him, regardless of what Satan throws at him. He's ready for it. And so we see this battle, if you will, take place between God and Satan. And as the battle progresses, we see some bad things happen to Job. In the first chapter, he loses almost all of his physical wealth that he has gained. In chapter 2, Satan convinces God to let him have a crack at Job's health. Verses 4 through 6, Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yea, all that a man has will he give for his life." Satan says, "Oh, you killed all his children, and you destroyed all his, let all his wealth be destroyed, and let all his children die. You let that happen. But he's still healthy, and as long as a man's healthy and living well, he's not going to worry about those other things. He'd give up everything for that." And isn't that true? They say that when we're young, we do things that destroy our health to gain wealth. But when we get old, we will give away every penny of our wealth to try to find some health. That's the way it is. When we don't have health, nothing else is as important to us as that. That is our number one priority, is to regain that health. That's the greatest thing. So Satan makes a valid point that, yes, people will give up a lot to be healthy. But Satan's misjudged how devoted to God Job is. He tells the Lord, "If you put forth your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life." This verse is very significant in telling us who's in charge in this universe. Satan had to ask God's permission before he could touch Job. And even when God gave his permission, God set the boundaries. Yes, you can touch him. Yes, you can cause him health problems. Yes, you can cause his flesh and his bones to have problems. But you cannot kill him. God said it. Save his life. God set the rule. He sets the boundary. He always has and he always will. And so we need to understand that. Now as we see Job then in the suffering state, a lot of people want to know from the book of Job, why does God allow humans to suffer as he does? We know he allows it because certainly it's within his power to do anything that he wants to do. He allows it, as he did with Job. But People want to ask, why does God allow? Why? Why? Well, if you're looking for the answer to that question in the book of Job, you're looking in the wrong place. The book of Job never answers the question of why God allows this human suffering. It gives some possibility, like this case where God and Satan were having this argument, having this fight, if you will. But that doesn't always answer the case. There are more answers to that than that. What the book of Job answers is, how should we deal with human suffering when it comes upon us? It doesn't try to answer the question of why. It basically comes down to, because God is God and He can do what He wills, and whatever He wants to do is just and right. And that, the answer that we come up with when we want to ask why is God, because He has the right to decide how He wants to do it. Basically the answer is, we can't ask that question and get it answered. We just have to accept that it does exist. Human suffering is allowed at times by God. Now, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to respond? And let's look at how Job responds in chapter 3. Chapter 3 in verses 11 and 12, his first response to this, when all of these calamities have come upon him, and he's lost all his family, and he's lost his health as well, and now he says in verse 11, why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why the breath that I should suck? He basically says, why wasn't I stillborn? Why wasn't I miscarried? Why was I even born? That's how miserable Job's life is. He's to the point of despair that he said, it would have been better if I had never been born. Doesn't sound like a great man of faith. And yet all of us probably have had similar feelings when we were in the depths of despair over something that had happened to us, some suffering, whether it be physical or mental anguish or some emotional hurt that has come to us. We've all felt that way. Well, it would have been better if I just hadn't been born. It would have been better if I'd never lived than to have to face this. And that's what Job's feeling at this point. For some reason, and Job is pointed to as an example to us of perseverance, of patience. And yet he was wishing he was dead. He was wishing even that God would have allowed him to go on and die because he was suffering so. But not so much so that he would listen to his wife who told him that he should curse God and die. He wasn't going to go that far. See, if God wills to kill me, that's fine. I would be glad for God to kill me if that's what is necessary, if that's what needs to be done. But I'm not going to curse Him to have it happen. Then, chapter 4, we see the first of Job's friends answering. His name is Eliphaz, the Temanite. And Eliphaz says in verses 7 through 9, remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? Eliphaz is trying to tell Job that innocent people never have these bad things happen to them. He's telling Job that the only reason things happen to people is because they've done bad and they deserved it. He says, even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of His nostrils are they consumed. Well, now certainly we know it's true that the wicked, what they sow, they will also reap. But Eliphaz here seems to think that innocent people never suffer anything. I don't know how long Eliphaz had lived, but if he had lived anywhere near the number of years that Job had, surely he had seen somebody suffer that didn't deserve what they got. Or at least so it would seem that he would. But maybe he just thought every time somebody suffered, it was because they had done something bad. That seems to be what Job's friends all proclaim again and again. Only bad people suffer. Only bad people have bad things happen to them. It's only the wicked people. And God's punishing you, Job, because you've done something bad. So not only was he tormented by his physical ailments and emotionally distraught by the loss of his family, and, of course, his wealth, his physical possessions, but now he's got his friends are accusing him of being wicked and deserving this. Elisha has also said in chapter 5 in verses 17 and 18, "Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. For he maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth and his hands make whole." He says, that must be what it is, Job. You've done something bad, and so God is disciplining you. He's hurting you to teach you a lesson. But don't worry, Job, when he gets done, and when you admit you're wrong, and you confess, you just don't worry, because after he's corrected you, then he'll bind you up. He'll make you whole then. Eliphaz must have lived a very miserable life if he thought that every time something bad happened to him happened because he was doing wrong. The fact of the matter is, sometimes the bad things that happen to us happen to us because we're doing right. Look at Jesus. He was the only perfect man to ever live. And what happened to him? He was nailed on a cross for it. So yes, certainly it's true. Eliphaz is not wrong. There are times when God corrects us. God does discipline us and chastens every son who he loves, the New Testament tells us. But to say that every time something bad happens, it must be because we've done something wrong, is a gross misunderstanding of the way God works. In fact, the book of Job, instead of answering the question of why God allows suffering, more to the point, brings out the point that God does allow human suffering. Not just that he punishes people to make them suffer when they've done bad, which he did, and does those things. He uses those things to punish people, to try to correct them at times. But not just that, but that also he does allow even the righteous to suffer. And Job is his test case. Job is his example of that, that bad things happen even to good people. Chapter 6, verses 2 and 3, Job responds again. He says, "Oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed, and my calamity laid in the balances together. For now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words are swallowed up." Job compares the weight of his troubles to the sands of the sea. If you've ever been to the seashore and seen all of the sand, miles and miles just around the Gulf Coast, and when you add in all the seashore around the world, how much sand that must be, how much that would weigh. And Job says, that's how much, and my calamity, if you put all the bad things that have happened to me, and you lay it on one side of the scale over here, and you put the sand of the seashore over here on this other side, the troubles I've got would weigh more than that. You ever felt that way? You ever felt like the troubles you got just weigh more than you can bear? Job felt that way too. But he didn't give up. He felt like giving up, but he didn't. He kept struggling on. In chapter 7, continuing in his answer, he also explains just how bad things are. Now, you wouldn't say, for him to be the example that we're given in the New Testament of patience, you think, well, he must have never complained about anything. No, he let them know how his life was going on. Chapter 7, beginning verse 4, he says, "When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be gone? And I am full of tossing to and fro unto the dawning of the day. My flesh is clothed with worms and claws of dust. My skin is broken and becomes loathsome. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, and are spent without hope. Oh, remember that my life is wind. Mine eye shall no more see good." That's how bad he thinks it is. He thinks he's never going to see anything good happen again. Sometimes we've all been in that boat where things just seem so dark and so drear that we're ready to lose hope. He says, my days are spent without hope. There's nothing more miserable than to live without hope. Life without hope is merely existence. It's not life at all. And Job was feeling this. He said, I'm never going to see good again. He was wrong about that. But that's the way we humans are. We're so short-sighted sometimes. We don't realize that the way things are now is not the way they're always going to be. Things are going to change. If things are bad, they're going to get better. If things are good, there's a good chance they may get worse. That's the way life is. Good and bad. And we have to go through it all. Chapter 8. One of Job's other friends, Bildad, the Shuhite. He's one of, interestingly enough, one of the shortest men in the Bible. You know, he's only a Shuhite. That's just a little joke. That's not serious. We really don't know how tough, very little joke. But in verse 3, he responds to Job by asking Job, does God pervert judgment, or does the Almighty pervert justice? And we know the answers to those two questions. Almost without fail in the Bible, when a question is asked like that, it's what we call a rhetorical question, where the answer is an obvious and resounding no, no, no. Does God pervert judgment? Absolutely not. There's no one who could bribe him or could cajole him into changing the right sentence. Does he pervert justice? No, absolutely not. He has to, by his very nature, be just. He has to be fair. We just have a misunderstanding of what fair is. Truth be told, we're fortunate that God is not fully just. Because of his mercy, he has taken out his justice on Christ. And we may be able to receive his mercy instead of his justice. If we were to receive the justice of God, even Job, even though Job is going to proclaim that he hadn't done anything wrong, he had sinned at some point in his life. Everyone did. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The book of Romans tells us all. That includes Job. And so, if God was going to be truly just, he would strike all of us dead. But he hasn't done that because of his mercy. Blessed is the Lord, for his mercy endures forever. That's what the psalmist said a bunch of times. You couldn't begin to count how many times the psalmist says in one psalm or another, his mercy endures. Blessed be God for his mercy. We need to recall that. We sometimes demand, I want justice. No, you don't. Justice is not something we want. Not real justice, because real justice would find all of us guilty and lacking and worthy of death. We want mercy instead of justice. But God does not pervert judgment. He does not pervert justice. Bildad is right in that respect. God certainly could never be bought. He could never be convinced to change from what is right or to betray the truth for a lie. He couldn't do that. No one could make him do that. And Job responds to that in chapter 9. Job knows that. Verse 2, he says, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. He says that if a man wants to argue with God, and God was questioning him, and they were arguing, he said, even, there's no way a man can even answer God one time out of a thousand. There's just no way we could compete with God. If we got into a debate with God, we want to argue the point with him like we sometimes do with each other. All right, well, let's talk about that. Well, what do we do? And we'd start arguing back and forth. No, but what about this? Well, he says, we couldn't do that with God. We'd lose every time. He said, we couldn't even win one time out of a thousand if we argued with God. Job knows that God is just. Job knows that God is sitting in judgment. And he knows that man has no place to complain. But that doesn't mean he doesn't want to try. Chapter 10. We'll finish here for tonight. We'll continue on with the book of Job another time. But in chapter 10, Job says, I will say unto God. Job is very brave in saying what he's going to say unto God until God actually shows up. When God shows up, we'll see a different Job. But Job said, I'll say this to God. I'll tell God. I'll say unto God, do not condemn me. Show me wherefore or why thou contendest with me.
He says, show me that. Tell me why you're treating me this way, God. He said, that's what I'm going to say to God. I'm going to ask him, just straight up, why are you treating me this way? Why are you letting these bad things happen to me? And some of us feel that way too. We even word that sometimes. We may even pray that. God, why are you letting this happen?
And that's what Job says he's going to do. He said, I'll say this unto the Lord, unto God. I'll say, don't condemn me. Show me why you're contending with me. Dave likes boxing, and you know, if you've ever watched boxing, you know what a contender is. Contender is one that's fighting with the other. They're a contender. They're contending. Jude tells us to earnestly contend for the faith. Well, we'll fight for it. So Job wants to ask God, why are you fighting with me? And sometimes that's the way it feels when bad things happen. We feel like every time we turn around, God's fighting with us. But we've got to understand, see, what Job doesn't know is that what God's actually doing is God's on his side. God's wanting to prove to Satan what a good man Job really is. That Job really is one in a million. That Job is the one that's going to be faithful in him no matter what. And we need to remember that too when we go through troubles and trials. Sometimes it may be that God's trying to show Satan, this one's really, truly faithful to me no matter what happens. And we need to be sure, God's not fighting with us. Satan's the one fighting with us. God's on our side. He's in our corner saying, come on, you can do it. Keep on, don't give up. We need to always understand that we are going to have times of suffering in life. But God is not the bad guy. Satan's the bad guy. All death, all suffering, all these things come as a result of Satan and his influence in this world. Now it may be sometimes that we have done something bad and are reaping the benefit, if you will, if you'll allow it to be called benefit. We're getting what we sowed. We planted it, and now we're harvesting it. That may be the case sometimes. That's why we have to examine ourselves. Job had examined himself, and he couldn't find any reason that God should be treating him this way. So he wants to ask God, why are you doing this to me? But he didn't see the big picture, and we don't either as humans. We see just one day, just today, and we remember what happened in the past. But we can't see the future. We can't see the plan that God has laid out before us. We don't know. We have to have faith and trust Him, just like Job did. Job knew God wasn't perfect. He wanted to know why God was doing this, but he wasn't going to give up his faith in God along the way. He was going to keep believing in God and keep trusting God. He just wanted to know why God was allowing things to happen to him. Or more likely, at this time, in the way his friends thought, he thought God was causing these things to happen to him, was doing these things to him. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. For whatever reason, we ask that you do so as we stand in that.